Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time, and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget, so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Hello and welcome to the podcast of the Lotus Eaters for what day is it? The 23rd of April, 2025.
It's just in Wednesday, case. Wednesday, my dudes.
It is indeed. And it's exactly 1 p.m. BST. Oh, you know, where would you be without us telling you the date and time? And today we are very pleased to have Jess Gill back again.
Thank you for having me.
And then, very unfortunately, we have Harry Robinson back again.
Hi there.
Oh, look at him. He's so happy. Happy to be
I'm
here.
I'm just happy to be here.
I have an announcement. It is St. George's Day. I know everyone will get their pitchforks and torches outside my house if I don't say that. Yes, you've been told. Well done. Hooray.
Happy St. George's Day, by the way.
Yes. I don't know what people do on St. George's Day. Fly a flag.
I think they say Happy St. George's Day to one another.
If you have a dragon nearby, kill that. That's a good way to honour St. George.
If you have an innocent pint near you, drink it before it's too
late.
That's
true. You can honour St. George by downing a pint, I've heard. I'll certainly be doing that later. So we're going to be talking about the morality of deporting gang members. I would say that's probably pretty moral. There we go, we've covered that.
It's a very good thing, though. Mm-hmm. My hot take.
And then Jess is going to be talking about women versus mass migration.
We're building a new movement. It's very exciting.
We're going to nag the migrants out. Mm-hmm.
And then the complete flip side of this is Pakistan doing mass deportations, which I don't think there are any women involved in that.
Women, Pakistan, two sides of the same coin.
What? I know generally what you're trying to get at.
I don't feel the need to explain myself.
Okay, fair enough. It's going to make this podcast very difficult. You've got to do some explaining of yourself.
No, I'm just going to sit here in silence during my segment and make random assertions with no
backing. Callum's back in the room.
Yes, that's right.
I love you really, Callum.
Come back.
So anyway, I suppose we're on to the left's newest hero, which is you, Harry.
No, it's not me. I'm not the left's newest hero.
Yes,
I don't want anything to do with those sick reprobates and degenerates. Anyway, to talk about what I'm actually going to talk about, the left have their newest hero. Surprise, surprise, he's probably a criminal. We don't know exactly for sure, but the signs seem to point in that direction. This is following up on a segment that I did, I think it was last week? No, it was 2 weeks ago, where I was talking about the mass deportations that should be happening under Trump and aren't really happening under Trump because of all of the legal blocks that are being put in the way. So I was asking, why are they still here? This one was more specifically orientated around the trendy Aragua gang that were being identified by law agencies through their tattoos and associations and obviously the crimes that they were committing and being deported that way. There was a big stink about the fact, oh, you can't identify gang members through all of the gang tattoos that they have. Ridiculous argument. And but they were using that kind of human rights violations and all of the arguments surrounding that to try to block these people being taken out of the country.
If someone has face tattoos, they've probably committed crime at some point. They're guilty of something.
Just on principle, we should deport them. if you have a facial
even if
tattoo.
They are native, just deport them.
Yes, as straight to El Salvador.
Aesthetic crimes.
Ukulele can deal with you. He knows what to do. And then this was followed up with earlier on this week, in fact, just a day or two ago, where Stelios was covering what I'm going to cover a little bit of today, which was the case around the new hero, who is Kilmar Abrega Garcia, named Kilmore. Interesting choice by his parents, where Stelios was looking at the due process debate and asking whether rounding up all of these illegal migrants and potential gang members and simply shipping them off to El Salvador was legal, whether it was constitutional, and whether it stuck to their right to due process. Now, I would personally argue immediately that if you have entered the country illegally in the first place, you have no right to due process, you have no right to be in the country, and therefore are not subject to and privileged to the rights that are assigned to citizens. But Stelios wanted to talk about that. My takeaway for me personally is that getting bogged down in this whole due process argument is a complete distraction, because the process is already rigged. It's rigged in favor of human rights lawyers and subversives who just want to block the process for as long as possible. Ultimately, you might win the legal case and be able to deport them, but that may be years in advance from now, and it means that you do not get to deport anywhere near as many people as needs to be out of the country.
And it's also, this is a bit of foreshadowing for my segment here, is very much politically possible if you have the political capital and the will to do it, because Pakistan in 2 weeks deported 80,000 people, and they perhaps even more than that, because the 80,000 were just the people that left voluntarily. And so could you imagine in the space of a month you could be deporting 250,000 people a month?
Yeah, and if most of those are self-deporting as well, then you don't even have to worry about all of the complaints about human rights, especially if you're in the UK or Europe, where there's the ECHR to deal with, which always uses, what is it? Is it Article 8 is the right to a family life?
Or is it Article 9? I can't remember.
One of them is the right to a family life, and the other one is the right to not face degrading or humiliating experiences, which are the two that they always use to block these kinds of actions, because it's either they've already got a family here, so you can't get rid of them, or if you send them back to their home country, they're probably going to face a pretty severe punishment for, say, being a murderer, being a rapist.
There was a case of, I think he was a Nigerian fella, he had committed either a child sex crime or something akin to that.
One of the usuals.
And they were like, he'll face persecution in Nigeria.
Good.
And yeah, not only is it good and he deserves worse, but also he faces persecution here because it's against the law.
Yes. Nigeria, what you're accusing them of, is being a country that upholds their laws, whereas we aren't. I mean, what's the argument? What's the moral argument there? Either way, the fact that they can hold all of this up for as long as they already have is a sign that the system is broken and working in the interests of our enemies. And this is the perfect case for it, because as part of this, Stelios was talking about Mr. Kilmar Garcia. And I wanted to look at the evidence for why it is that they are making the argument that he has been deported. He was deported as part of a clerical or administration error, by the sounds of it, but they want to keep him out of the country, and I'm going to look at the kind of evidence that they are using. First, though, the Democrat and left-wing media response to it has been as hysterical as you would expect, making claims that Trump is absolutely unhinged for pointing out that Garcia has tattoos on his left knuckles, which seem to indicate that he is MS-13 because he's from El Salvador. For those who don't remember, MS-13 were the gang that were terrorizing El Salvador that Bukele cracked down on in the first place. Now, this tattoo is of a marijuana leaf, smiley face, a cross and a skull. Now, they've photoshopped here MS-13 over the top of it, and it makes sense until you get to the skull, which was kind of confusing to me. So M for marijuana, smiley face for S, 1 is the shape of the cross, 3 was the skull, didn't make sense to me, but it's something like it's El Cranio or something like that.
And oh, El Cranio.
And
yeah.
E is the third letter of the alphabet.
If an English person had to guess at what a Mexican called a skull, that would be it.
El Cranio. Well, it might be me guessing. It might be, but I looked it up because I was a little bit confused with this, just going, is this Trump and his administration just BSing? Are they making stuff up? But there does seem to be some symbolism behind it, so I could give him the benefit of the doubt there. To make sure that you all know that he's just an innocent good boy who didn't do nothing, Democrats have literally gone out to El Salvador to meet with Garcia. Here is Garcia right here.
He's dressed like an American tourist as well, so you know he's harmless.
Yeah, that's how it always works. And here is Senator Chris Van Hollen, who's gone out to make sure that he's okay and not being treated incorrectly in El Salvador. They say in this article, Democratic lawmakers, including Van Hollen and a quartet of House progressives, recently traveled to El Salvador to visit him, who has been held in Salvadorian prisons since his deportation last month, and they are pushing for his release. On Monday, Democratic Representatives Maxwell Frost of Florida, Robert Garcia of California, Yasemin Ansari of Arizona. Only one of those names sounds particularly American to me, but that's just my opinion. As well as Maxine Dexter of Oregon, they all arrived in El Salvador to bring attention to President Trump's illegal defiance of the binding and unanimous Supreme Court decision, because this went to the Supreme Court. They said you need to bring him back and allow him his due process, which, again, seems like a complete waste of time to me, because in all likelihood he's just going to get sent back in the end anyway.
Well, the whole reason they're doing all of this theater is to try and bring up like a human example, say, look at what Trump's doing. He sent this innocent man away from where he wanted to be. Isn't it terrible? That's true of every single one of those people, all of those gang members
trying
that really
want to
sell
innocent
drugs to your children. Yeah.
This was always the threat, even leading up to the election, where people were saying, okay, if Trump gets in, does mass deportations, actually gets the ball rolling on it, the media is going to center around not the worst cases, but they're going to try and find the people who are as innocent as possible, get pictures of their families crying, looking sad, do interviews with people about the destruction to the local communities that it's causing. Not that they ever cared about when these people were coming in and destroying the local communities by completely changing the culture, uprooting people who had to move out, destroying local job markets by suppressing wages. They never cared about anything like that. It's when you try and fix those problems, that's when you need to get the ball rolling, get the cameras out so you can get pictures of the children in cages.
They also, when Trump got elected, didn't they video women at the southern border, at the border wall, just bursting into tears?
Which it was already
was
illegal.
Hilarious. Yeah.
You shouldn't be there in the first place. I don't feel bad for
now
you.
Now it's doubly illegal.
It's like if murder hadn't been illegal before and they just made it law. You can't kill people anymore.
Damn.
And you got a video of a man with a knife about to stab someone. He's like, oh, God, I can't believe it. You
I was willing
supposed to
do it
in
when
the
it,
first place.
I was willing to do it when it was illegal once, but illegal twice. That is my line.
I know, right? But at a press conference in El Salvador, he said that he was there because he'd received hundreds and hundreds of calls and emails from his constituents saying, I represent a lot of immigrants. I represent a lot of people who see themselves represented in this situation. So a lot of illegals and gang members, presumably. They're saying, Congressman, do what you can now because it's him today and it can be one of us tomorrow. So he's outright admitting there his primary interests are for the immigrants in his community, not the Americans, not the people who have been there legally for who knows how long, not the people who may be able to trace their ancestry back to and before the Civil War. No, he's not working for those people. He's working for the foreign elements in his constituency.
Well, that's
very
what the Democrats have to rely on now. Now they're supposedly slowly losing their core demographics. Trump even won around a historic number of black voters and Hispanics. And so the people already in America are trending towards Republicans more generally, as a, you know, in the broadest sense.
Well, there was a report.
And so they need foreigners to grant them amnesty for them to vote for them. So it's contingent on their survival that they speak to these sorts of people and try and pretend like they care about them.
Yeah, and there was a report, I mean, this was on Fox News, so they're going to bias it, but they were talking about how back in 2016, the people who were being polled about mass deportations, only 36% supported. Now we're in 2025, only 9 years later, I think it had gone up to 56%, around that figure. So yes, you are right. More and more people are in favor of this, especially following Biden, mm-hmm. who let
well, the
so many
also got worse, so it makes sense that more people are going to
yes.
talk about it.
Yes, but the most As always, I love visiting this website every so often because you just see the most bonkers rubbish posted on there. I decided to take a look at the Daily Forward to see what they might have to say on this situation.
Good luck.
And they compared it to the Dreyfus Affair.
I don't even know.
Do you know the Dreyfus Affair from the late 19th century when a member of the French High Command who happened to be Jewish was accused of being a traitor and then imprisoned falsely? And then there was a big civil rights movement to try and clear his name and get him out of there. And they're comparing this to that.
Did he go to the country illegally?
No. I mean, he was a decorated officer in the High Command.
He was French. That's guilty enough for me.
Yeah, but they're trying to compare it to that, and they're trying to make the argument through this that there is no evidence against him and that the people supporting his deportation are being irrational and unreasonable. So the question is that true? Is it true that the people who are saying maybe he shouldn't have been in the country in the first place, are they being irrational, or is there evidence on their side? Well, let's take a look at that. First, I'll go to the BBC. So you know that this is not going to be biased in a right-wing direction. And let's see what they have to say on the matter. So here's some of the evidence against him. So first of all, he has already acknowledged, Garcia this is, that in 2012 he came to the country illegally. Straight away. So this is why I say that he should not be under the protection of the same civil rights as other people in the country who are there legally and who are legal citizens.
I think it's fair to say that if you come to a country illegally, there should be no route to citizenship. If your first act on arriving in a country is to break the law, well, quite frankly, I don't care about your wishes whatsoever.
What about his...
To say the least.
I agree. And what about his potential association with gang activity and MS-13 in particular?
Well, I think that even if there are some, you know, false positives, I don't. If it were my safety in the United States, I would not care in the slightest. If you're in any way, even, you know, linked in any way to MS-13, just don't come to the country.
Well, let's
don't get let in. Don't get granted citizenship. And that is how you avoid having foreign gangs in your country. Is just avoid the places where they come from.
I would agree, but let's see what the evidence is. In the first place, before we jump to too many conclusions. So, back in March of 2019, he was detained along with three other people in Hyattsville, Maryland, in the car park of a Home Depot. Officers at the Prince George's County Police Department said that the men were loitering and subsequently identified Mr. Abrego Garcia, Kilmar, and two of the others as members of MS-13. In a document titled The Gangfield Interview Sheet, the local police detailed their observations. They said Garcia was wearing a Chicago Bulls hat and a hoodie with rolls of money covering the eyes, ears, and mouth of the presidents on the separate denominations. Officers claimed the clothing were indicative of Hispanic gang culture and that wearing the Chicago Bulls hat represents that they are a member in good standing with MS-13.
They're big Chicago Bulls fans in MS-13, are they?
Well, apparently it's just a common piece of clothing that they wear. And they've even got somebody, Stephen Dudley, a journalist and author who spent years studying MS-13, said it's true that at some point the Chicago Bulls logo with the horns became a stand-in of sorts for the MS-13's devil horn symbol. So you've even got a supposed expert on the subject saying, yeah, they wear this. This is very indicative of the
they're
kind of clothes
they're doing it for the logo rather than they're not fans of the team.
No, they're doing it for the symbolism of the devil horns. According to the field interview sheet and other court documents, officers said they were also advised by a proven and reliable source that Mr. Garcia was an active member of the MS-13's Western clique with the rank of Checchio. However, Mr. Dudley said that Checchio is not a rank, but is instead used to refer to recruits who are yet to be initiated. So all that's confirming is that he had been recruited by MS-13.
But he's not been Checchio'd yet.
Not
past his Checchio.
They also don't yet make note of any tattoos at this point. I've seen this pointed out online, which suggests that given that gang members tend to get tattoos as signifiers that they have committed certain acts or gotten a certain level of ranks into the gang, that presumably, given that he was a Checchio at this point, he must have been initiated after this arrest and then has gone on to do whatever it was needed to get the tattoos.
It's also worth mentioning as well that if you come from a country where tattoos signify that you're in a gang and you choose to get tattoos, you're very consciously choosing to present yourself as a gang member, which even if he's not a member of the gang, which it seems like he is, you're still trouble if you're trying to make out like you're some sort of tough guy who murders people for money, which isn't that tough.
And again, people are pointing out, well, the police didn't give the reasons exactly why they were saying that him and the others were MS-13, but I would imagine that police officers in an area like Maryland, which sadly has had a lot of gang activity in it since incursions from the southern border have been increasing, that the police officers would know. They would know what they're talking about. Lawyers, it carries on, for Mr. Garcia's argued in court filings that the Westons clique is based in New York, where they said their client had never lived. And according to government documents, he has dismissed the information given to police against him as hearsay. According to his lawyers, Mr. Garcia has never been convicted of any criminal offence, including gang membership, in the US or in El Salvador.
Well, he has committed a criminal offence in breaking into the country.
Yes. It's strange that they didn't arrest him for that there and then, seeing as he confirmed, and the other two did as well, I believe, that they were all in the country illegally. But that's neither here nor there. That was the discretion of the police officers at the time. He lived in the US the US for 14 years, had three children, and worked in construction, according to court records. So he was a good boy, didn't do nothing, etc., etc. You know how the story goes. The judge who presided over his 2019 case said that based on the confidential information external, there was sufficient evidence to support Garcia's gang membership. That finding was later upheld by another judge as well. So it seems that the evidence presented in the courts was more than enough to confirm that he was at least a recruit into this gang.
And also, you can't necessarily rely on courts to be impartial. These are quite often courts that have a Democrat slant.
Potentially. So if they're reaffirming this as well, if they're confirming it...
Maybe these specific ones are different, I don't know.
Yeah. As a result, Garcia was refused bail and remained in custody. During his time, he applied for asylum so that he couldn't be deported to El Salvador. He wasn't granted asylum, but he was granted a withholding of removal order, which meant he couldn't be deported anyway. So the result is the same. In 2021, his wife, Jennifer Vasquez Schurer, filed a protective order petition against him, alleging he had physically attacked her on multiple occasions, according to the documents shared by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. Ms. Vasquez Schurer also said in a statement on the 16th of April that she decided not to follow through with the court process at the time, and that she and her husband were able to work through this situation privately as a family, including by going to counseling. So they talked out how beautiful for them. She described her husband as a loving partner and father, and has repeatedly denied that he is an MS-13 gang member, but of course she would, wouldn't she? Let's look at the DHS report, where they were talking about other things that he's been up to since he got here, including a potential suspected human trafficking incident. So this report was detailing a traffic stop encounter that led law enforcement officers to suspect Garcia of involvement in human trafficking. The documents also reveal that they already, again, thought that he was an MS-13 member. On December the 1st, 2022, Garcia was stopped by a Tennessee Highway Patrol officer for speeding. Upon approaching the vehicle, the encountering officer noted eight other individuals in the vehicle. There was no luggage, leading the encountering officer to suspect that this was a human trafficking incident. Additionally, all the passengers gave the same home address as the subject's home address. So all these eight people just happened to be living with Garcia, as well as Garcia's wife and children, I would assume.
To be fair, in that part of the world, it's not as unusual, but obviously there's funny business going on here.
Well, yeah, there's definitely funny business when it goes on to note that during the interview, Garcia pretended to speak less English than he was actually capable of, and attempted to put the encountering officer off track by responding to questions with other questions. When asked what relationship he had with the registered owner of the vehicle, so it wasn't even his car, Garcia replied that the owner of the vehicle was his boss and that he worked in construction. So presumably the story they were going with was that they all just live at my house, S.A. These are all my colleagues, S.A.
These are all my cousins.
Yeah, these are my cousins, Holmes. You know, that's the story that we're going with. We all work in construction, Holmes.
Can you do the rest of the segment talking in that voice?
No, what, like Speedy Gonzalez? And that's it. At that point, Garcia got back in the car, sped off, and went, "Gandale, gandale, riba, riba!"
That's what I was looking for.
Yeah, yeah. And they played... No, that's
Mexican
not
hat dance.
Yeah, the Mexican...
And they drank tequila and had a nap.
Well, they were all asleep at the time.
Yeah, obviously. Everyone lived mediocrely ever after.
Oh, beautiful, the best kind of story you can get from Mexico. The encountering officer decided not to cite the subject for driving infractions, but gave him a warning citation for driving with an expired driver's license. I love that he keeps getting in these situations and nothing happens.
He's very lucky, isn't he? Like,
yeah, I mean,
he keeps on getting into criminal situations, and he's just like, oh, I'll just write you up for your expired driving license. So you're driving someone else's car full of eight suspicious people, all with the same address, and it's not even your, you know, not your car. You've got, you don't have a license, and it's full of Mexicans. And
officer thinks for a minute. He's like, all seems fine to me.
My goodness.
I mean, my God. Good job he wasn't in LA. But yeah, obviously, Donald Trump was posting about his, that picture again with the MS-13. Interestingly enough, his wife actually thought that this was an important enough detail, the tattoos on his knuckles, that when she's been sharing about things on social media, she has purposefully been covering up his tattooed knuckles with love hearts. So that's interesting.
It's a very interesting placement, isn't it?
Is that something that you would do if they didn't mean anything? Maybe it's just a coincidence.
So, I've got a slogan that I quite like to trot out, and I know people are quite cautious around slogans, but it's quite a good one. It's called, when in doubt, chuck 'em out. And I think that this very much applies to this guy of, if there's any evidence, it doesn't matter. No one has a right to live in your country, so you can say no on, dare I say, trumped up charges all you like, and sorry.
Yeah. It's all right. You get the puns in while you can.
I can. Yeah, it's America's right to say no for any reason. If they say, we don't want people with, I don't know, a specific kind of tattoo, then it's the American people's right to say so. Who cares? All of this fussing, all of this nonsense is just a smokescreen for, we want illegals in our country because they vote for us.
And they cause trouble to our enemies.
Yeah, exactly.
And they depress your wages as well. Again, that's interesting. And also, there is on social media right now clips of his wife being asked about the protective order against him in 2021. She just freezes. She says nothing about it. She just moves straight on. She's like, oh, we dealt with it.
Do you see a muzzle slightly inch into frame close to her head?
Not in that video, but, you know, anything could have been implied. Happening off camera. And we also actually have the report of the protective order describing it. I won't read the whole thing, but suffice to say, he was physically abusive to her in a way that wasn't very, very nice. So this is the kind of gentleman who has been confirmed numerous times by law enforcement, by two separate judges, to be a member of MS-13, seems to have tattoos on his body that indicate that he is a member of MS-13, has been suspected of human trafficking in the past, and also has been physically abusive to his wife. And this is the guy that Democrats and the left in general, as you would expect, are trying to keep in your country, my fellow Americans. And
you're American?
I choose to be. Apparently anybody, if this guy is American, I can be American, right?
I'm sure they'll give you the pass.
So there you go. I'm more related to the people that formed America, that founded America, than these guys are. So
that's true, yeah.
So there you go. And thankfully, there are at least some Democrats who have been saying, maybe this isn't the hill that we should die on. Trump basically got voted in off of the back of mass deportations. They're very popular, and this guy's probably a gang member. So let's not go with it. But some people are still stupid enough. So again, due process, have whatever feelings that you want on that. But I think the evidence seems to suggest pretty strongly that this guy is a gang member, not the kind of guy that you would want in your country in the first place. Who knows what he has been up to as part of his gang activities. There you go. Let's go through Rumble Rants. Joseph Addison Aldred says, nobody knows how the Japanese police identified Yakuza members. I know, right? I wonder if there's any distinctive body tattoos that they have all over them that mark them out as Yakuza. Gangs would never do that, right?
It's just their general vibe that the police pick up on, you know? They're just very good at reading vibes.
Yeah, must be it. And Hedonism says, I imagine you'll cover it, but two separate immigration judges adjudicated Kilmar Abrego as a member of MS-13 before the order of holding due process. Again, yeah, that was mentioned in there, but it I mean, again, if they're trying to say he isn't, well, it's everybody who encounters him seems to.
That's a random name picked up on something that I picked up on, but kept my mouth shut.
Yeah, he was physically abusive to her in a way that wasn't nice, as opposed to the nice kind of physical abuse, Harry. Winky Mark. Yeah, there can be, but, you know, I'm not going to go into detail on that kind of thing, you dirty dog.
Oh, dear.
Anyway,
please raise the tone, Jess.
Yes.
Great. So I'm going to say something extremely controversial here. You've probably never heard it before. However, maybe importing millions of third worlders who have no respect at all for women, and I don't just mean in the based way, I mean like actually they want to kill women, maybe that's not a good idea.
Whoa, that's such an extremist bit of rhetoric. That's terrible, Jess. How could you come on this platform and say such
Get a out.
Thing?
Get out. We didn't invite you on to do this sort of bigoted rhetoric.
We are a very inclusive office here, okay?
I know. It's too far. I came across this realization, this revelation, when I first moved to London. But very recently, it really hammered home the point. So I was on a picnic with my good friend Elizabeth Heverin, and it just got to a point where it was kind of ridiculous how many times we were harassed by certain men, just men. Men could be here. So basically, I was a bit late, woman moment. So, and I approached Liz. I was like, "Hey, Liz, everything okay?" She was like, "No, I'm just being approached by this man who just wouldn't leave me alone." Just a man, obviously, no description. I was like, "Oh, that's a bit strange," but you know, these things happen. And so we put the trad picnic down. Picnic blanket down, and we just enjoy our time at the picnic, and this random man comes up to us, just sits next to us. The entire field is completely empty other than, you know, us there, so he has plenty of options, but he decides to sit next to us, and I'm just like, maybe he's a fellow artist, you know, maybe there's that. But no, he just continues to stay there, stare at us, and then eventually starts to make conversation with us. Nothing too incriminating, but it was just one of those where it's just like, I don't want to speak to you, please leave me alone. And then we continue around our day. We go to, I think we go to the shop, and we walk past a bunch of delivery drivers who are just there, you know, spending their day leering at women, apparently, because they decided to make inappropriate comments at us, stare at us, traditional stuff that happens in modern Britain, I guess. And then finally, the nail on the head for me was basically I was walking to the bus stop and I heard a car beeping, and I thought, oh, it couldn't have anything to do with me. You know, I was just on the pavement, just walking along. There was just traffic with the bus, with the bus stop and everything. It can't have anything to do with me. I turn around, and it's just this black guy there just waving at me and blowing kisses at me, and it's very, very strange. So, yeah, that was my experience on a jolly day out on a picnic in London.
A bit harrowing, isn't it? You're regretting moving to London. I didn't like London when it's full of actual Londoners, let alone the new Londoners.
Yeah, so. Don't get me started. Don't get me started. But this wasn't the first thing. I think I've clicked the wrong
That's
thing.
All right. Woman moments. You've skipped all the way to the end of your segment. Spoilers, Jess. Come on. You can't keep saying woman moment. We're supposed to be making woman jokes.
I know.
You're stealing our thunder here.
Yeah.
When I originally moved to London, I moved to Tottenham. Worst mistake of my life.
Of all the places to move in London.
I thought it'd be culturally enriching, you know.
Thankfully,
that's what
I'm not
heard.
Familiar enough with London to. Is Tottenham particularly bad? The most I know is that Brixton is awful, because I've had my own encounters in Brixton.
Yeah, it's the opposite side of the Victoria line, but equally shares the same issues. I think it's around 75% non-British, non-white British. Every time I go out, I am the only British person there. Except from when the football's on, where you see like a pilgrimage of white British Dinos, you know, making their way to the Tottenham Stadium.
I remember being in Paddington Station and loads of Millwall fans got off the train and the entire station fell silent. It looked like all of the minorities had just witnessed a KKK rally. It was amazing. Everyone was full of fear, and I was just like, these are my people. They're coming back to London.
It's amazing.
It's a miracle.
It's amazing the fear that simply our presence can strike.
It was wonderful, because I saw minority women calling their family members and things like that because they turned up. It's just like, they're just football fans, you freaks.
They're coming back, starts crying, back up, we need to go back.
I'm pretty sure it's one of the only times I've ever smiled in London, I would say.
Wow.
Which is saying a lot for a country boy like me.
Yeah, but back onto sexual harassment.
Sorry, that was not a helpful story in any way.
But so when I originally moved to London, to Tottenham, I knew it was going to be bad. I didn't think it would be this bad because every single time I go outside, I wouldn't say it's straight up sexual harassment, but something weird happens. And at this point, you just get used to the staring and, you know, the weird comments, or even like not so weird comments, but it's just like, you know, a British person wouldn't do this. Like the nicest comment someone said to me the other day was wishing me a happy Easter while he was staring me down. So at least they're adapting to our culture in that way.
Have to head off the first criticism that you're going to get. What would you say to somebody who is going to respond with, well, English people and English women have always been the victims of catcalling from white men?
Oh, I'm going to get onto that in a second.
Oh, okay. All right.
However, I will say this. It is a lot different to, you know, just being catcalled by... They say the build is the most stereotypical one. But then again, like, if it's a builder, you kind of know who they work for. And, you know, there's... you know, they can be held accountable with that. Whereas if it's just like a random African, you know, on the streets, you know, what do you do in that situation? When I first moved to London, it was literally every single day something happened. Someone make a weird comment. I was with a friend at the time. Someone tried to like follow us back to my accommodation. They just kept on harassing us, and it was like, I was quite sure I was drugged up on something. It was very, very strange. And at this point, it's like, I'm only 10 minutes away from the station. I have to get a bus. Partially because, well, not anymore, but partially because I'm just lazy and asthmatic. But if it gets later than, like, you know, 6 p.m., I am just going to get a bus because, you know, it's a bit scary out there and I don't want anything to happen.
Well, it's getting to the point now where I would advise women in Britain to not go out at certain times without accompaniment by a man, and specifically a man that can defend both himself and you.
Certainly in particular parts of the country.
Yeah.
It's become a sign that the part of the country that you're in is still a particular, has English demographics, if women can be out and about, like jogging and running.
Yeah, where I grew up,
safely.
Where I grew up in South Devon, people are out and about at night walking home alone. You see women walking home at night on their own when it's quite late after they've been on a night out, and they don't think anything of it because it's normal and it's English culture. I didn't even have to think about it growing up, and many of the women I knew didn't either. They would be like, oh, it's fine, I can walk home, that's all right. I don't need you to walk me home. It's all almost seemed a bit antiquated and like old time. It's, oh, that's very romantic, you offered to walk me home, how nice. But now it's actually becoming a very necessary thing, which is very unfortunate. And I can't imagine, I mean, it makes me uncomfortable thinking about it. So for a lady like yourself, it must be even worse because you can't really escape it.
It is literally everywhere, which brings me on to the next one. I don't know if you've seen
video.
I don't know, there just seems to be this epidemic of like Indian men whenever you go to like Hot World. And they're just there dancing on their own, like viciously trying to make eye contact with you. It's just no self-awareness, social awareness at all. Again, like literally everywhere you go, the consequences of having a low trust society means that. Oh, sorry.
It literally looked like he was trying to cop a feel then as well.
Probably was.
Not just like trying to dance close to her. No, he was actively just trying to feel her up on camera.
I've
as
seen
well.
People beaten up for far less than that, to be honest.
Yeah.
And you know, who am I to argue?
But the thing is, when we talk about sexual harassment and sexual assault and police and convictions, like, that is sexual harassment. You know, if he's groping her and she's obviously pushing him away, that is sexual harassment. Like, I don't want to be like a woke feminist about it, but that is non-consensual touching.
Well, there is still a line, right? Like, yeah. It's not like just because feminism's over-egged certain aspects of it that it, you know, the whole thing has to go. No, of course not.
And in better times, behaviour like this, there would have been men around her to back her up who would have taught him why that wasn't polite. But we don't know what happened after the it was filmed, so maybe he learned his lesson.
I would be surprised.
No,
because this was filmed in London, wasn't it? So it's a godforsaken place.
Yeah, but going on to the statistics around it, it's something that we've highlighted. Although I'm going to change the banner because when you put foreigners convicted of nearly a quarter of sex crimes, leftists who just don't understand statistics think, oh, well, actually, you know, what about the other 75%? It's just like, no, they're overrepresented in that demographic.
They don't understand per capita.
Yeah.
No way.
Well, one number's bigger than the other, so the bigger number's worse, right? That's how it works. I know maths.
But yeah, foreign nationals are just highly highly overrepresented when it comes to sex crimes. And maybe it has something to do with the culture. Maybe it has something to do with the fact that, you know, where these people are coming from, they just generally, you know, have no respect or no regard for women, and they are willing to put women through these abhorrent, violent practices and acts. Who knows, right?
I can throw a little case study in here and point out that at one point Sweden had one of the lowest rates of sexual assault in all of Europe, which made it one of the countries in the entire world that had the lowest rates. It's now got one of the highest rates in Europe, if not the highest. And it's approaching sort of third world levels because of certain demographics that prey towards Mecca and others.
Yes, sadly, one of the oldest comments about the Germanic peoples going back to Tacitus was that we're simps. We've always been simps. I hate to break it to everybody, but Tacitus was noting how remarkable our respect for our women was even back then. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, and that's talking about when we were still roving bands of warlords and such as well. So it's only got worse since then, lads.
Ancient Germanics with their fedoras saying, I respect women.
Totally long-housed. Absolutely long-housed.
Primitive katanas.
But it does produce a certain culture that does mean we are more respectful to women than basically most of the rest of the world, which isn't always a bad thing. Yes, they can nag. Yes, they can be irrational. Yes, they can really get on your nerves. But showing respect to women is not always a bad thing.
They are human beings, you know.
I know.
They do experience emotions quite often more so than men. And so be nice to them, please.
Just
my Lotus Eater's PSA.
Just
be nice to women.
Always listen to them. You can switch off. It's fine.
What did you say? Sorry, Harry?
I didn't hear that. What was it? Okay, carry on. We've done enough woman bashing. Back to being a fedora tipping perspective.
But I think a lot of leftists think it is just you know, the norm that everywhere else doesn't have this kind of patriarchy, and it's just the West which is inherently oppressive. And if you invite all these people here, the only reason why they'd be oppressive towards women is because, you know, we've oppressed them and all that kind of stuff. And when I spoke to Callum the other day. And, you know, he was telling me how they're treating, like, Afghanistan, for example. And I think if a lot of these people went to somewhere like Afghanistan, they realise, you know, this isn't the norm, and actually there is a bit of a culture difference.
They don't want to realise it, though, because remember when the Taliban took back over and there was the before and after of the woman on the street of Kabul, where one day she was dressed normally, the next day she was wearing a covering over her head? People around the world saw that, and leftists still decided, nope, this is perfectly fine.
Yeah, exactly. But going to the Center of Migration Control, just to put it in a graph, as you can see, there are certain you know, people who come from certain countries who are overrepresented when it comes to sexual offences. So, yeah, take that as
what a selection of nations as well. Like, I'm amazed, actually, that the rape capital of the world, the Congo, isn't the top. That there are countries worse than the capital of the world.
Oh, no.
Well, apparently Congo must be keeping all of its precious rapists to itself, whereas Afghanistan's sending theirs over here.
They're spreading their scholarly ways, I suppose.
So I just wanted to go over some case studies, some examples of this. Which you'll probably be aware of, Abdulazidi, the Clapham chemical attacker, he threw acid all over an ex-girlfriend while her two children were there. That's a classic example, just normal British man. We've also got the Southpaw Stacker, which controversially some may say he's just another Welsh choir boy. I would argue that, you know, partially because he's not ethnically English, controversially, maybe that has something to do with the way he's acted and the way, you know, he's gone about his ideology in attacking and murdering multiple young girls. Controversial opinion. And then we also have Sabrina Nessa. This was during the... I forgot the woman who was murdered at the same time. Sarah Everard. Who was murdered by police. And everyone was like, why is no one talking about Sabrina Nessa? Is it because she's a woman of colour? Those same people became very, very quiet when they realised the person who killed Sabrina Nessa. I think he was Albanian, if I'm not mistaken.
Koçi Selamaj.
That looks very Albanian, yeah.
Yeah, they've soon forgotten about her once that was released.
Funny how that happens, isn't it?
And then another instance, a depraved man who raped a woman in front of other passengers on London Underground jailed. I think this was in broad daylight, just normal violence against women on the tube, apparently. And I don't feel like people talk about this enough, but this was the case of Emily Jones.
Oh, this one was really horrible, wasn't it?
This was near me, so I'm from Bolton, and she was killed in Queen's Park, which is weird because... That's where me and my friends used to go and, you know, just hang out and go to the park and, you know, and it's just sad to see, you know, somewhere from your childhood, youth be looked at like that and be marked like that and, you know, just be so close to it. And again, like, the fact that Emily Jones's name isn't as known as, you know, George Floyd, for example, even in the UK. You know, I reckon if you go around the whole of London, you know, what percent will know her name? None, I would reckon.
It's a massive injustice, isn't it, that people remember a fentanyl addict and career criminal over a young girl that had her throat slit by a migrant.
Who then got cleared of murder.
Yeah.
Oh.
Because he was insane, because that makes...
Is it a woman, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, sorry, because she was
insane. Was it an Albanian woman?
Yeah, Albanian woman. Yeah. She was mentally unwell.
So
yeah.
Not only are they traffickers and drug dealers, but they're murderers as well. Mm. What a wonderful nation that is.
I was working, doing work experience at the time for an MP in the area, and one of the cases that he was discussing was the fact that her parents, her family, I think they felt uncomfortable because... The killer's family were able to, like, go around, and obviously they were claiming some kind of benefits as well. And so the thought of their family, you know, bumping into the killer's family, it was traumatic, and we have to fund that. And it's just another tragedy, really.
Bought them all.
Yeah. Manchester attack. Again, this is close to home, I think, for you as well, Harry, right?
I had a friend there.
Yeah, my cousin was there, and afterwards they... offered therapy sessions at school. I was a part of the youth council at the time, and one of the girls who came forward, she developed PTSD from being a part of this attack, and every time you go outside of Victoria Station, you see the bunch of flowers there and the vigil.
My friend also suffered PTSD from it and went through therapy to deal with that. Also, one of my friends from university at the time, later my flatmate, was working at the Manchester Arena and just happened to not be in that day, which is incredibly lucky because obviously the bomb went off in the stalls outside where there's all of the little shops and such where you can get things, and that was where he was working. So if he'd just happened to be working that day, he could have got caught in the blast for all I know.
Yeah. Yeah, see, this is the thing.
I mean, I was in Manchester the day after, and it was surreal because the whole city felt like it had been locked down. You know, I get out of Manchester Piccadilly Station, there are armed police officers, very heavily armed with assault rifles and other kinds of guns. I'd never seen anything like it in my life.
Mm. Yeah, we're told to not look back in anger. Yeah. And actually, you know, part of... I almost feel a bit... guilty mentioning some of these victims and relating it to immigration because the parents have explicitly said sometimes don't, but then you have to realise the government's probably, you know, nudging them to put out a certain message. And at the end of the day, if we want to stop more examples like this, The only way is to talk about the issue, quite frankly. And then the next thing, obviously, the biggest letdown, the grooming gangs, example of Charlene Downs, who was killed and disposed off at a kebab shop. The grooming gangs were obviously the biggest issue in Britain. It's the biggest shame of Britain recently, or at least in the God knows how long. And the fact that this isn't given the justice it's deserved. I was speaking to a father of a grooming gang victim yesterday, and he's still waiting for his daughter to receive proper therapy for that. She's been on a waiting list for years. There are no services there. There are for other kinds of sexual abuse. Like, everyone knows domestic violence is wrong, for example, and even though it could be improved, there are at least some services there. But for this, which, you know, thousands of girls have been raped, groomed for years, and there's no support system there, is astonishing. So
It's one of those things that whereby they've not only been failed in the sense that the perpetrators haven't been brought to justice and there's been nothing even close to justice, but also they've been treated so poorly by all of the institutions that are meant to help them. So it's like a doubly awful thing almost.
Mm. Yeah, and it's always important to point out that while Islam is a huge problem in this country, this is not purely related to Islam. This is inter-ethnic competition,
well, it was
right,
and Pakistani going on. Grooming gang thing, wasn't it?
Yes, but some people like to relate it purely to Islamism, whereas this is just a problem of mass migration of violent foreign elements in general, outside of religious consideration.
The father who I was speaking to yesterday, who's very active around the grooming gang situation because his daughter's affected by it, so obviously, you know, he wants to be an advocate for victims. He was saying how it's also Bengalis and Albanians who are also getting involved in the trafficking and the grooming of young girls now. So calling it Pakistani is even inaccurate at this point.
So yeah, I suppose Bengal, obviously not too far away from Pakistan, part of the British Raj, and Albanians apparently remiss to find a crime going on that they're not a part of.
Mm. Yeah. But a slight white pill, if I do say so myself. We're starting the Women's Safety Initiative,
right.
Which we launched it just a week ago, and already we've almost received 10,000 followers. The amount of support we've received has been amazingly overwhelming. I thought it would do well because obviously it's such a big issue, but I didn't think it would do that well, and the amount of women who have come forward to share their stories, to offer help and support with this, it has been incredible, and I think we can actually make a difference to this, because I'm just fed up of just talking about these issues. Mm. It's like, raising awareness only goes so far. It's like, what am I actually doing for, like, grooming gang victims, you know, when we could actually be making a change? So that's a part of what I want to do. And, you know, you look at the left, and for all their faults, I think something that they do well is activism. Look at how much BLM raised, might have gone to luxury mansions, but, you know, the fact that they have that sense of community and fundraising, I think we should replicate. So, you know, I've set up the Women's Safety Initiative to talk about these issues. I have a great group of girls here. I won't show the video because it's cringe to show yourself. But there's us next to the suffragette statue. They're all relatively known in politics. There's Amy from Bombshells, Eloise from Vox Populi, me, Liz, who's well known all around.
She's Liz.
Yeah. We love her. And Saskia, who makes Instagram videos.
I think there is. Oh, don't comment on your own picture. I think there's a certain beauty to this picture, which is in the background there is one lone new British person lurking, which
we got
is
in
perfect.
Trouble actually when we were taking pictures and filming this. Basically, we received so much support from, like, older women coming up to us, and I was really worried, like, they'd be the ones who would have a go at us. No, they were like, good job, girls, Labour are doing a terrible job. It was actually two Jamaican guys who had a go at us to the police, who was also an ethnic minority, and the police told us to move along.
Grassing you up, Jamaicans, blimey. They're going to get in trouble with their community.
Yeah, nightmare.
Everyone likes a snitch.
So other than pure advocacy, I'm sure you'll talk about this, what's with the Women's Safety Initiative, what are you going to be doing? Are you going to be starting particular initiatives? Are you going to be offering to support the people? What's the organisation going to be doing day to day?
Yeah, so far we're only volunteers. It's a thing that we're all doing in our spare time. But what I would like to see happen, so before a few months ago, I was a part of a libertarian women's organisation, which I will not name. However, I had to leave that libertarian women's organisation because they didn't like me speaking out against immigration.
That's not very libertarian of you,
I know,
Jess.
Freedom of speech.
So they were cringe open borders libertarians.
Yeah. Worst kind.
Yeah.
Yeah, I later found enemies. Out that one of the women who was one of my bosses, she was actually an illegal immigrant coming from Brazil who lived in the US, which was interesting. But they pretty much said that, Jess, you can't speak about immigration. And I spent an hour on the phone to them. I cried at one point because it's such a sad issue. And they said, no, you're being collectivist. You don't own your community. And I was just like, I can't not speak about this issue. Like,
yeah, if the government is bringing in violent people who threaten your safety, even within the libertarian framework, you can say that's a violation of the non-aggression principle.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Quite easily, actually.
That's so lol, but I'm sorry, Jess, you want to be safe? You want to choose the community around you? That's pretty collectivist, bro.
Yeah.
Pretty collectivist. Did they suggest
concealed carry of a pistol? That's my favourite women's safety argument, is that women carry guns and shoot potential sex offenders.
I don't think they'd be opposed to that, to be fair, although that wasn't their main.
I don't see it happening in Britain, though.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the things about this that I quite like is that, on the one hand, the mass migration is annoying in that it pushes up the cost of things and makes jobs, you know, finding jobs more difficult and things like that for men like me. But I think that the most frustrating part for any, you know, British person is the fact that they're coming over here and causing social problems, basically. Mm. And the thing that makes me most angry about immigration is thinking that these men, who we don't have any idea of their background, could do things to the female members of my family. Mm. And that, above everything else, it sort of pales in comparison, makes my blood boil and makes me want to do something about it. And I think that I'm probably not alone in that. I imagine, Harry, you probably feel much the same.
If I ever spoke about what I actually want, then I wouldn't be on this podcast. I'd be in prison.
I know the feeling.
Yeah.
Well, something that I found quite nice is that quite a lot of men have reached out saying, look, I'm afraid for my daughter, I'm afraid for my sister, my female friends. And I know, like, the term, like, male allyship and, like, male feminist is a bit cringe, but, you know, it's not
male feminist. It's very patriotic and pretty traditional historically. Yeah. to want to, within your own group, to want to protect your women.
I think the defining characteristic of the social role a man has to play, the thing that's most exclusively his own, is that of protection, I think. Mm. Because some of the other roles, there's overlap with the sort of female role in say a family dynamic, whereas the protection thing is sort of all you. It's what we're, that's why our upper bodies are 30% larger, is so we can protect people. So I feel like we're biologically programmed to have those concerns, and I think that leaning into that is important. And I think that good men don't hurt women, they actually seek to protect them. And I not very controversial, I know.
Yeah, and it's pretty understandable why we would develop that way, because of, given historically, one of the great tragedies of war has been mass rapes. Mm-hmm. On the winning side. Typically, if you are on the losing side, that bad things are going to happen to your women. And you don't want that to happen, because obviously you care about them, you love them, and also they're going to be bearing your children.
Yeah, just to go back to what we're actually planning on doing. Again, I think the left has something, you know, some merit to the fact that, I think, you know, Ben Shapiro, for example, his whole, you know, facts don't care about your feelings thing, I think it's actually a bit of nonsense, because I think feelings do matter a lot. When you think about BLM, for example, you know, they don't care about, you know, the statistics and the facts, and quite, you know, quite frankly, it's the opposite.
They also don't understand per capita, so it's very difficult to explain it to them.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas if you do lead on anecdotes, if you do lead on personal stories backed up by facts, you know, we have the positive, the strength that we are actually, you know, right on this. I think there is a lot of power in that, and I think getting women to come forward, share their stories, make it less controversial to speak about these issues, because every woman I know, even the left-wing ones who refuse to, you know, connect the dots, so, you know, they're just individuals, they've had stories like this. I have friends who have grown up around those areas of Manchester, and their friends have been raped and groomed, but they're more left-wing, and they don't connect the dots even, and I think that's really awful. That, you know, they have this blindness that they can't see, you know, what's actually causing this issue. And I think, you know, empowering them to speak about this and saying it's okay to recognise, you know, what's going on here, I think there's power in that. But also on another level as well, and again, it depends how much capacity we have, but as I've been speaking to grooming gang survivors and, you know, people who are related to grooming gang survivors and people involved in this area, like I said, there isn't much support there. There is no, you know, professional training, professional counselling. There are no resources around that. There are no, you know, prevention advertisements showing, you know, girls the early signs of grooming, showing parents what to do. It's a completely underdeveloped and under-researched issue. So I think, you know, providing potentially therapy sessions for young girls who are in that situation, I think there is some support for the parents, and hopefully empowering, you know, charities like that, and like the Maggie Oliver Foundation, for example, I think there's a lot of good in that. So that's another part of our goal. We have a lot of ideas. I'm quite looking forward to it, but that's what's to come in the future. Like I said, this has received a lot of support, but there has been some backlash. So this guy, he's one of the guys in Harry Potter who's jumped on the anti-JK Rowling bandwagon. He's like the older guy who, I don't know his exact name, the older guy who's like in Gryffindor and he's on the Quidditch team.
Oh, I know the one that you're on about, the Scottish one from the first two.
Yeah, I think that's him. And I wrote a post saying, you know, now we've sort of dealt with the trans issue, can we finally move on to immigration, please? Because I'd personally say that's a bigger issue. Both are important.
Wait a moment. I've just realised something. Wait, let me just double check. No, it's not down. You forgot to add the Giga Chad.
Yeah. Maybe next time. But,
this wasn't a supportive post. Oh my god.
I just think it's,
for the purposes of YouTube, that was a joke. It was a joke.
I just think it's kind of ridiculous how these people, they can't honestly address the arguments. They can't honestly address women coming forward with these experiences, the believe all women, you know, type of crowd. When women actually come forward about these arguments, these issues, they just accuse you of racism and bigotry. And I've realised as well with the left, like, whenever I get leftist criticism, it comes in, like, waves. So there's, like, some random leftist, you know, big account who says something, and then they all just pile on and say the exact same thing.
They're sort of like locusts. That's how I conceptualize them in my mind, is that you get one and you think, oh, that's a bit strange what that's doing here, and then they all descend on you for a little while.
Yeah, with what you're talking about, where the male feminist likes to switch on a dime, the best example I can think of, I forget who he was talking about, but you know who Vorsch is, right?
Yeah.
Sad to say, we all know who Vorsch is here. There was a video of him, a clip came out a few years ago when there was some case in America where a woman had been assaulted by a foreigner or an ethnic minority or whatever. Before he knew that it was an ethnic minority, he was all in on the allyship, we need to believe all women, going on about his male feminist talking points. See, this is what makes America terrible, that women have to live in fear, that they're having to worry about men assaulting them, this, that, and the other. And then somebody points him to an article where she names a non-white person as the perpetrator. immediately, without missing a beat, he switches to she's being racist, this is obviously playing into racist tropes, I can't believe she would say this, why would we even listen to a woman like this anyway? It was amazing how evil it was to watch him dishonestly switch in a moment's notice.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, speaking of dishonest leftists, so I will spare you the cringe of playing the clip, but I was against this left-wing guy on GB News. And again, like, it's... I feel like we've won the immigration argument already. I don't know, maybe that's just naive of me, but I was really taken aback by his arguments, because he was like, oh yeah, you might get harassed by, you know, immigrants, but at the same time, we have some good footballers... Like, he unironically said that. It's like,
so there's an acceptable amount of sexual harassment if they're good at football.
Yeah.
And depending on how tasty their food is. The amazing thing is, the English team has no point being called England if it's not full of English people. Mm-hmm. Because the whole point on that was like, oh, the nationalities, they get their best footballers together and see which nationality is best. You could just get English people to play football for the English team, and you could just buy the recipe book. We have the recipes.
We invented football, didn't we? So we should be good at it by now. Also, there's no pride in saying our team of Africans beat your team of Africans. I mean, it's like when we play France... and then you play the Italians, they're all actually Italian, and they still win. Worth throwing that one in there.
But yeah, it was very eye-opening to see someone just, like, have no sense of reality.
Well, the fact that he was able to excuse it, because there are parts of it that benefit him and he doesn't have to live with the consequences.
And he said, there's nothing you can do to change it, he told me. He's like, whether you like it or not, I think he said. And it's like, yeah, because it's been forced on us.
Sorry.
That's what I'll be saying when the deportation flights go ahead, is whether you like it or not, you're going to have to deal with it.
Sorry, so his argument was, I don't care if people get raped, I don't care if people get murdered, I need the yummy food, I need to watch my sports ball.
Please crop that out of context.
Is that it? is that his argument?
It's a bold move to go on television and deny the severity of sexual assault in favour of sports. But okay.
This clip's going on YouTube, so I will refrain from further comment.
Well, at the end of it, I was just like, I said to the audience, I was like, you can see what he's advocating for. You know, he's like deluded. You know, you make up your mind what future of Britain you want. And the thing is with these leftists, to quote a famous indie filmmaker and philosopher, you do kind of have to just step over them. You can't acknowledge them. You just need to go beyond that and just face the facts and show the audience, show the British people what's actually true. I don't think there's any point debating with these people, quite frankly, at this point. But I will give some credit to ourselves. Unlike most, I won't call ourselves feminist, women's organisations, women's movements, we actually don't hate men. So, as shown by...
Thank you. I was worried this whole time.
Yeah, just in case there's any doubt. I think the approach of teach men not to rape is obviously, for one, it's just demonising men, and two, how productive is that?
I think even rapists understand that rape is morally wrong.
Mm.
That's why they often conceal their actions. Yeah. I think it's not that they don't understand that society doesn't approve, it's that they don't care what society says.
Yeah, so, like, these ads on the London Underground really annoy me. Again, I think most normal people already know this, that staring and pressing and upskirting women, you know, shouldn't be...
They're printed in the wrong language.
Well, that's the thing, and even if they were printed in the right language, would they listen? Like, no. And this is the thing, because when you have this focus on the oppressors, who they deem as the oppressors, it's not really useful. It doesn't really help the victims, because once this does happen to you, what are you meant to do? Like, I wouldn't know what to do in that situation. I've never reported any of this, what I've experienced, because I don't think anything would happen. And it happens so frequently. Like, what are you meant to do? So I think if we are to create an actual women's movement, we need to create a movement that prioritises victims rather than just shaming all men and categorising them over this rather than, you know, just shaming the ones who have actually done it. I know, controversial. And then also, something that we're also not going to do is the anti-white men are part of it, naturally, because let's be real, that isn't the issue. So over the past few decades, years, there has been this push to demonize white men and frame them as the perpetrators of sexual harassment. And anyone who's actually been to London knows that isn't the case.
I think it's because we're the least likely to kick off if we're represented as a sexual harasser.
Yeah.
Like, could you imagine if it was a certain demographic, how much we would hear about it? Just like, we're not all rapists. If you ignore the crime statistics and the per capita rate, you know, this is very bigoted.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And there's also, what I will get onto last, there is this demonisation. One of the things that Matthew Guy, who I was debating on GB News, brought up, he compared builders, working class builders, to, you know, third world immigrants who stare and leer and sexually harass and follow women home. I just don't think those are the same thing. For one, I've never been sexually harassed by a white person. Like, at all. I don't think I have. I can't remember that.
Saying it can't happen. Yeah, just it's much less likely to happen.
Of course. And I'm not saying, you know, they don't do that. Obviously, they do. But from my experience, it's just, you know, I think this stereotype of this builder, you know, saying, you know, a woman needs to smile, I think that's kind of an outdated stereotype. And I think most people know that, you know, is not something that happens really anymore. Again, not saying it doesn't happen, but that isn't the majority of the issue. And if you actually
also, I'm sorry, who cares if a guy tells you, says that you look nicer when you smile?
I've had people say that to me.
It's hardly the worst thing in the world.
I've had
that was always making a mountain over.
And people say that to me before, and it's been straight men that have not been hitting on me. It's just.
Are you sure about that?
Well, not entirely certain, but it's just that I look particularly miserable sometimes. You know, you work with me long enough.
I do work with you every day. He's always miserable.
Thank you. That's very true.
I know you try very hard.
Thank you.
Yeah, you know it's not a threat to your safety when they do stuff like that. And again, I'm not saying it's right. I think everyone should be respectful, obviously. But it's not addressing the actual issue of street harassment. That's just not being honest about it. And I think promoting this stereotype is inherently anti-working class and anti-British, quite frankly. And it, like I said, it just doesn't stress the real issue. So in conclusion, please follow and support the Women's Safety Initiative. Great.
Hooray. We've got a bunch of Rumble rants.
Also, it's 2:10 already. So do we have any video comments and stuff, Samson? What do we have time for? Is there Calvin Robinson's Common Sense Crusade coming out? Oh, so we can just. Oh, okay.
I can get through my segment quite quickly.
Yeah,
anyway,
sorry,
so it's fine.
No,
it's
woman moment.
It's all right. I'm only talking about Pakistan now.
Of course,
she
managed to go on for so long, didn't she, folks?
So Rumble Rants are. That's Random Name says, I live in Montreal's little Maghreb, and one of my friends almost got. I can just say the word now, we're not on YouTube. Raped twice, walking home at night. She used to date a Moroccan chap who wouldn't even shake our hands for being infidels. Oh, sounds like a lovely gentleman.
Amazing.
And again, he says, she's now engaged to a lovely chap from Chile, whose grandpa came over there in the late 40s from Germany. I'm sure he has blonde hair and blue eyes as well. The Habsification says, Cole Palmer is like Cole. His grandfather is from St. Kitts. Cole plays for Chelsea in England. There's a picture of Cole next to his grandfather. Have a look.
I got the picture up when I saw that, and yeah, his grandfather is very black, and he is blonde with brown eyes. Unusual combo.
I didn't know this guy. He's got an unfortunate face, hasn't he? Good footballer, though. I liked him in the World Cup, so credit to him. JM Denton for $20. Thank you very much. Good point on there being no value in debating disingenuous lefties with no principles. The Overton window will only shift by moving past them. I think also a lot of normal people judge lefties by their physiognomy more than they care to admit. And it's never favourable, is it?
I mean, gross.
If you give me a lineup of five people, I could always pick out the leftist. I'm like a bloodhound for it. And speaking of my...
Why are you so good at ethnoguesser?
That's true, yeah. I can tell a Tasmanian Abbo from an Abbo.
To be fair, so
by the shape of their skull alone.
So can I now as well. Mm-hmm. You better be practicing your ethnoguesser at home right now, okay?
Well, after this podcast.
Why are you giving me that look, Samson? You're playing it right now, aren't you, Samson? I wish you could see what I can see right now.
It's a leer. Anyway, Pakistan is doing mass deportations. Apparently, and this is from November of 2023, 1.7 million Afghans faced deportation at that point. So we've got to go back to this point because this is where our story starts. But it's carried on and it's ongoing and it's very interesting. It shows, to my mind at least, that where there is a will, there is a way. And if Pakistan can do it, it's good enough for us. I think that actually, one of the few things we can borrow from Pakistan is the fact that it shows you can deport very large quantities of people, albeit to a neighbouring country. In fact, Samson, I meant to put in a map of Pakistan and Afghanistan. So basically, the Afghans in particular had been causing problems, and in capitals as well, lovely, shout it to the rooftops. Cheers. And so, as you can see, they're not too far apart from one another. So logistically speaking, it's probably easier than deporting people from Britain to Pakistan, for example, because they share a land border, a pretty sizable one, albeit a very deserty one. And it's still a useful example. So the story starts when Pakistan announced that undocumented foreigners residing in the country must leave by the 1st of November 2023 or face deportation. Well, believe it or not, most of them stayed, and most of them faced deportation. So apparently, about 3 million could end up being deported from this November cutoff into some point in the future. And apparently, one third of the 4.4 million Afghans living in Pakistan at the time were undocumented, so illegals. So that's a pretty sizable number. And the reason that they started these deportations is that out of the self-deletion bomb attacks... That's YouTube friendly, right? They say Muslim words and then they go boom. You get the gist, right? 14 out of the 24 of those were carried out by Afghans, which, you know, you don't have to be a genius to know that they're massively overrepresented there. So they issued this ultimatum in October after all these terror attacks, and they said, listen, you're a danger to our country, we want to get rid of you, which... if you can see the parallels to lots of European countries, there are some. And so the government ordered 1.73 million undocumented Afghans to basically leave the country. And then in the 3 months following the deadline, over 500,000 had already been deported. So that is 500,000 in 3 months. That's pretty good. I'll be happy with those numbers, I think, in Britain. So it's worth mentioning as well. Well, hang on a minute. How come all the human rights lawyers didn't stop them? And thankfully, Kunli Drukber has an answer to this. Apparently, Pakistan's cousin Amir, who works in the Human Rights Office at the UN, arranged an ignore human rights pass, which allowed Pakistan to do this.
Can he sort me out? can we get one of them passes? And
I've always said I've needed a pass. that makes it sound like I'm trans now.
And Carl,
I'm not.
And Carl has always refused to give you his.
That's true. He's very stingy handing out those, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. Him and Calvin get them, but no. The Lotus staff can't get them, can they? God.
Well, I'm getting there. I get more of a tan, maybe I can.
You're looking particularly swarthy today.
I've caught the sun.
Yeah, likely story.
Harry, I came over on a rubber dinghy. All this time.
I knew it. You are
Italian. Perfect cover. That's why I never turn up on time. So this, I can't remember what it was, but this is from... I think, where is it? Yes. I forgot where I was in my segment. I got thrown off by the meme. But I've included this for some reason. Oh, yes, there was an emergency response. Yes, I remember why. Because it has the total return figure here. So they've got over 750,000 returned as of... this is from 15th of September 2023... to January of 2025. So that's almost 1 million people. Okay, it slowed down a little bit from the first 3 months, but they're ramping it up again, and some of the numbers are unprecedented. So, oh, now it's changing the wrong thing. So here we go. They've stepped up the deportations again because they're all the more sick of Afghans for some reason in April this year. And apparently Afghans holding the Afghan citizens card, which was issued by the Pakistani authorities and is held by 800,000 people, were just told to leave or face deportation back to Afghanistan again. And they've held these cards since 2017, and it gave them temporary legal status to stay in Pakistan before they got sent home again. Now they're getting sent home again. And this is again from April. I really like the rhetoric from here. This is Pakistan's defense minister, which I think is the way to do it. Could you imagine our minister of defense saying, listen, this is a national security issue? And he said, critics of deportations are undermining Pakistan's national interest. I like that. That's a good turn of phrase. Those who disrespect our flag and disregard our country do not deserve to stay here. Could you imagine what people would say if, you know, America or Britain or another European country said this? They'd be like, oh, it's fascism. They're being so racist. Oh, Europe's become dark again. Well, it's becoming darker. But yeah, this is perfectly fine rhetoric. This is the sort of thing that we should be saying ourselves. And the fact that Pakistan are beating us to it is kind of a bit frustrating, really. And then starting from the 1st of April, of course, it's only the 23rd now at time of recording. And they've got to a point where they're deporting 700 to 800 families a day. And this is in the month of April. And since the start of April until when this article was published, so the 18th of April, so maybe just over the first 2 weeks of April, 80,000 Afghans just voluntarily left, which is great. That's 2 weeks, you're 80,000 asylum seekers less. That sounds wonderful. This sounds great. How do we replicate this? That's what people should be saying is, well, we know it's possible now. And well, it's...
Keir Starmer is starting up the migrant crime league tables.
That's true.
I'm really looking forward to seeing what comes with that. Honestly, if Keir Starmer has just been secretly working in our own interests the whole time, and what the crackdown was last year was, don't get too hasty, lads, we're going to get to you, don't worry, then I'd be very happy. So I do honestly believe that while we may not get these sorts of results, that the kind of technocratic state that's being built up around us at the moment is seeing less and less use for the interlopers amongst us.
That's
and
true.
Is slowly going to start phasing them out, potentially.
Or they're harming.
Maybe I'm being hopeful here, but I do believe that Tony Blair, if he needed to, would just clear them out.
I think also because our entire system is basically like a cattle farm where elites milk money from hardworking people, it is damaging their ability to extract as many resources from us. And because we've got loads of deadbeats who sponge off of us, it's siphoning money that should be rightfully expropriated by our elites from us, rather than to these dependents. And I'm not saying that's a just cause, by the way. I'm just saying that's the way they view it. But I like this league table idea. I want it to be so that every year, at the end of the year, a nationality is declared the winner, and then your prize is every single person of that nationality in your country gets sent home.
I think it's beautiful.
Safely and legally and respectfully, of course.
Fair, yeah, there needs to be a game show aspect to it, and there needs to be a reward, right? Because otherwise, how is the government going to incentivize crime? Or, alternatively, not committing crime. Perhaps the government might want to punish crime for once committed by non-English people.
Maybe not the hate crimes and all of the social media stuff. That's a bit lame. But, you know, violent crimes, sex crimes, those are pretty good to punish, I think. Property theft.
And that makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there we go.
Tories would never.
And, yes, so as of April, they've deported quite a few people. And I think the number has reached, since this November of 2023, almost a million Afghans deported. So in the space of about 2 years-ish, give or take, you know, a few months, you can deport a million people from your country. And this is a country with Pakistan's infrastructure where you've got to get MPs in London and whatever to build an airport for you because you're incapable of doing it yourself. And you're still using trains from the British Empire because you don't know how to construct your own. And a third of your country floods every year because you don't know how things work. So if they can do it, so can we. And let's just put some of the people in the West to shame. So The UK, this is purely illegals rather than legals, but I think many legals should be deported as well, even if they've not even committed a crime, just if they're a sponge, they're a dependent financially. The UK has 215,000 illegal immigrants. The US has 11 million. This is just the ones that we know about that are on the books. Obviously, there's more illegals. Starmer has deported 24,000 in 8 months, 3,000 per month, or 14 per 1,000 a month. That's the per capita statistic if you are a leftist. Trump has deported 37,000 in 3 months, or 12,333, probably recurring, which is equivalent to 1.1 per 1,000 a month. And obviously he's drawing inferences there that I'm not going to talk about today.
Well, I would say to this that Trump, his administration does seem to be trying to deport more. It's just that there are many legal blocks.
Yeah, well, they've got to...
which I have been covering, whereas Keir Starmer is part of the system, so the
Trump has to
do what he wants.
Has to assemble the actual deportation system in the first place, because it was in such a state of disrepair, if not deliberate neglect. And with Keir Starmer, they don't. They allow him. The system allows him to deport people because he's left wing.
It's a Blairite system.
It
so
is.
They'll
yeah.
already do. They'll do what he wants.
So yes, Starmer, according to Academic Agent, is deporting 14 times the rate of Trump, and I don't think this is as much of an L for Trump because he's just getting going. But it's still food for thought. It's still interesting. But these numbers are still not on Pakistan's level. So Pakistan number one. Indians seething in the comments. I already get enough hate from people from India already, so let's just make it worse. Kashmir belongs to Pakistan. Just throwing that in there. I don't believe it. I just want to annoy you. And it's also worth mentioning as well, people in the West, like Nigel Farage, supposedly darling of the right wing, says it's a political impossibility to do what Pakistan has done politically here and deported nearly a million people. And even human rights groups, which are lame and gay, like Amnesty International, are whinging about it, saying, meet free Afghans at risk of deportation from Pakistan. Isn't it terrible? Oh, they're sending them to Afghanistan, the country where they lived and grew up.
Literally
and have
next
family.
Door.
Yeah, from one Muslim country to another. It's terrible. How awful. They're fleeing persecution. It's like, well, maybe they should have fought harder. Maybe they should have actually, if they didn't want the Taliban, maybe they shouldn't have folded and behaved like cowards and incompetents militarily. I don't actually have much sympathy for people fleeing war, because if your men can't fight, then you've failed as a civilization. I feel the same about Britain. I think we're pretty pathetic at the minute. So I don't have a double standard here. But I think that people give so much sympathy to people. No, you should stand and fight for your country. If you flee, you're a coward. That's I don't have sympathy for these sorts of people. Stand and fight. Do something if you care about your country.
Josh coming out for a Stalinist frontline policy.
Send in the women and children first.
Oh, God.
That's a joke, by the way, if you're watching Hope Not Hate. And yes, the Afghanis basically said, this is disappointing, but there's nothing we can do to stop it. It's funny as well, they don't adhere to all the nonsense. But you can see, just from this diplomatic picture, two different ethnic groups here, obviously. I think that's important as well. Harry's nodding. He recognises it. They're very different looking people, and that matters
yeah,
to people.
They are. That one of them's pretty different looking, I'll say that.
And that matters.
What's he hiding under that headscarf? Is
Voldemort.
That his head? Is that the shape of his head? It's not bunched up.
No. And then finally, I wanted to end on this. This is some annoying rights whinging, saying rights groups warn that many Rohingyas face severe risks in Taliban-controlled Afghanistan, including persecution, violence, and economic hardship. I always find that one funny. Can I claim asylum then? Because I'm facing economic hardship. I don't even own a house. I bet loads of people in Taliban-controlled Afghanistan at least own their own house. Vulnerable individuals such as women, journalists, human rights defenders, and former government officials are particularly at risk. I imagine that if there are millions of Afghanis returning to the country, chances are there's going to be too many for anything to be done, because no infrastructure in the world can deal with that. But there we go. Just wanted to give you some news that, yes, people say deportations are a political impossibility. People say that, you know, the numbers have to be slow and gradual. I say that if Pakistan can do it, so can we. Hooray. Oh, we got some video comments.
You're hosting the podcast.
I'm waiting for Samson to pull the... I was just looking at you to make sure you're all right.
I'm fine, mate. Cheers. Oh, you all right?
I've been better.
How about you, Jess? You feeling
good,
okay?
Thank
good.
You, yes.
Good. Everybody's happy. Let's watch some videos.
Before I begin, I want to wish you a very happy St. George's Day. Now, for the news down under, here in Australia, we're gearing up for a general election, which, as you may know, is compulsory. I have mixed feelings about it, but it got me thinking. Since Carl brought this up, do you think Britain should adopt compulsory voting? And if so, do you think it would make a difference?
Absolutely not to compulsory voting.
It doesn't help Australia.
Mm-hmm. It basically gives a democratic government a stronger mandate to screw you over. And in my opinion, I'm sort of critical of democracy more generally, but from a libertarian angle of my life isn't up for popular debate. How I live on my own terms isn't up for some parliamentarian to tell me how I should be living. Give me back the gold standard and let me live as I wish, you bastards.
This is Luxton's Fortune, one of my favourite dessert apples. Even if you've got a very small garden, you can still have an apple tree, as many can be grown as cordons, which means they are just one upright stem with 6-inch branches coming off that you prune every year.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Felt like I was, for a split second, in a gardening documentary. It's very nice. I feel peaceful and at ease.
Just to add an extra point to the democratic stuff that you were talking about a moment ago, the power in democracy is not in who's voting, it's in who's choosing what you're voting for. So unless you are in charge of that, doesn't matter how many people are voting.
There's not a party in electoral politics that remotely represents my political interests in the slightest. So there's no point. Why would I believe in a system that has betrayed me, basically?
So the first issue that I'll talk about with adolescents is the daughter's accent. If you listen very carefully, the mum, son and dad all have Liverpudlian Scouse accents, whereas the daughter speaks with an accent that's actually closer to, for example, mine or my mother's.
They had a very posh milkman.
Yeah, I suppose that would be... But that doesn't change how you're raised, does it?
Yeah, you never
accent,
know.
Accents aren't genetic.
I hope so.
To be fair, I feel like the younger generation, they're losing their accents. It's like, I'm not proper... I don't have a proper Bolton accent, you know, it is...
Still pretty northern, though.
Yeah, but my northern friends call me a bit too posh, even though it is...
Sounds familiar.
I get the same.
Yeah.
I don't.
Spending too much time in the South, I guess.
Yes, the South will rise again, ladies and gentlemen.
I've not even spent that much time in the South. My mum just always used to tell me off whenever I spoke like a commoner.
Ah, very based.
That's what she always did. We do actually have two more Rumble rants that we should probably
read course.
Here. Shimo20 says, society misled to reject traditional gender roles. DEI policies misplace women in roles unsuitable, diverting men from their responsibility to protect and provide for women and children. Re-education is needed. There do need to be some cultural incentives to get people to behave as they should. JM Denton, once you start a serious deportation, the self-deportations will start and the invasion will stop.
Now we're off of YouTube, I also want to say that I don't want self-deportations because I don't want people to leave with the assets that they plundered from the British people. I want there to be a tally of every foreign person and how much they've taken from the state. And we take that money from them, even if they don't have it, we take their assets and ship them out. I don't want...
The surveillance state would be able to get that information.
Well, we have records, you know, we've got NHS records, we've got... employment records, we've got all of these records keeping track of people. We've already got all of the information. Feed that into an AI run system that can just tally it all together per person. Very simple, actually. And you could get this set up. I reckon a team of 10 people in a week could have all of those records on every citizen of the UK.
Tony Blair, I've got a deal for you, okay? You get your digital IDs, all right? I won't even whine about it. as long as you give me everything that Josh just listed then. I think the two actually go hand in hand with one another, wouldn't you say, Tone?
Hit me up, Tony. I'm a big fan of your work.
But then we should... Oh, sorry. That's a random name of someone new in. Harry, would you consider... Would you, considering the nuclear-grade cringe that is The Last of Us 2 show... I assume you mean watching it. It would make my tism very happy. No. No, I
watched the first series.
I played the first game. First game was a great story with fine gameplay. Didn't play the second game because I already saw everybody covering it. I watched Synth's video on the second episode of The Last of Us Part Series 2 this morning. And yeah, I'm shocked that they actually went ahead and killed Joel again, because who's going to keep watching? Who's going to keep watching? At least in the game, you had the gameplay to keep you going. But the story is not going to keep people hooked, especially with weird... tiny face, what's her name, Bella Ramsey playing Ellie.
Well, she hasn't got a tiny face, she's got a very big face.
No, she's got big head, tiny face. She's okay. Kind of got a Charlie Kirk thing going on.
Fair enough. Should we read some comments ever so quickly? I'm going to have to power through. So we got some general ones. Reese Sim says, happy St. George's Day, ready for another year of, did you know that St. George was actually not English? Yeah, he was Greek, but Greeks are fine. We even have a Greek in the office. Gabriel says, happy St. George's Day, lads and lady. And Gary Wilson says, happy St. George's Day to all at Lotus Eaters. Well, thank you very much. Haven't we got a lovely audience?
I'll respond to Stelios, who's actually left an edited comment on the website for me regarding my segment and what I mentioned to do with his segment. So he says, to clarify, I didn't say in my segment 2 days ago that Garcia shouldn't be deported. I said that A, if it's so easy to prove that he's an MS-13 member, there's no reason not to go through the usual process. That way there will be less room for the left to scream that Trump is against the rule of law. B, illegals breaking into the country should not go unpunished. There is a difference between deporting someone and putting them into a prison without first going through the courts. And three, I said that due process is important because it is crucial for the rule of law. The fact that the leftist respects the rule of law doesn't mean that others should. So to address point B first, honestly, I don't really care where they go. Frankly, if they send him to prison, I don't care. That's my take on that. To address A and C at the same time, given that they are related to one another, first of all, it does seem that he's been identified as an MS-13 member by numerous people in positions of authority in the judicial system previously, so I would say that based on that evidence, given that they would have had access to information that it seems that the public don't at the moment, that goes enough to say that he is as is. And also, where it regards the rule of law, first of all, again, the rule of law has been corrupted to the point where the entirety of the laws regarding this stuff is based around human rights doctrine that exists purely to block this kind of radical action that needs to happen if you want to get illegals out of your country. And two, it's been acknowledged in many constitutions over the centuries that there is a point of crisis. There is a crisis point in which you do need to declare a state of emergency, in which executive action needs to take precedent over the established rule of law. I would say the problem with illegals, not just in America, but in the West in general, constitutes that breaking point where we have reached the point in crisis where a state of emergency is in effect. And so rule of law can be suspended for a short time to allow for executive action. That's been the case in many, many constitutions. I don't know if the US Constitution allows it, but many other constitutions have in many different nations, and I think it is necessary in this case because, again, the rule of law has been corrupted to the point where it's just there to protect the illegals and other subversives in your system because it was mainly set up by people who only wanted to protect those people.
Thank you for that very succinct answer. But carrying on, I'm going to read some comments for you, Jess. Incorrigible Frog. That's very difficult.
Incorrigible Frog.
Incorrigible. Thank you. My girlfriend was late to our first date because she didn't want to go out alone and walk at night to meet and had to wait for a taxi for a 10-minute walk. Suburban Glasgow, 5 years ago, immigration is a women's safety issue.
So, absolutely, yeah. But even the taxis aren't safe anymore.
That's true, yeah. I wouldn't trust a taxi. That's horrible, isn't it? You can't get a taxi, you can't walk. Buses are kind of a bit grim.
I'd say Uber's the safest because at least you can track it on your phone.
That's true.
Yeah.
I think you've got to do the sort of Hollywood thing of shave your head, and just try and put off potential offenders. I don't know. Sophie Liv says, yeah, I feel you, girl. When I lived shortly in London, I was constantly stalked and grabbed at by certain men. I basically fled home to Denmark. Thank you so much. It's amazing there are finally women's rights issues I can actually support, the trans issue and this. These are real women's issues we're facing these days. Very true.
Thank you for the nice comment. Please message us. We'd love for you to get on board.
So Omar Awad says, for my segment, the final comment, even if they were being honest about deportations being a logistical impossibility, it's a strange argument to make that we shouldn't do any deportations. We are drowning, so we might as well stop swimming. On the other hand, if the Pakistanis have the technical expertise to handle millions of deportations, why don't we import them to handle it? It's just not a problem they want to solve. Well, we've already got plenty of Pakistanis. We can ask them to organise their own deportations if they're so good at it. And on that wonderful note, thank you very much, Jess, for
thank
coming on.
Me.
And thank you very much for everyone watching at home. And I hope you have a happy St. George's Day. And the news of the world hasn't depressed you too much. Thank you and goodbye.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.